anything.
Totally and completely unfiltered. So she told me a story that had just happened the week before. You know what had just happened the week earlier? She walks into a fourth grade class in the school that she runs. And there's a girl who's sort of nonchalantly trading pornographic pictures with the other fourth grade girls and boys in the class. So she's horrified. She goes over to the girl. She says, "What are you doing?" The girl looks up at her and says, "Why, what's wrong?" She says, "This isn't appropriate. This is yeshiva. This isn't appropriate. You're in fourth grade. You're a 10-year-old kid. What are you doing?" The kid looked at her kind of surprised, like sort of like, what's your problem, lady? Okay? Absolutely no hakara sechet, no recognition at all. It's a new world. So she takes the phone away from the girl, an iPhone 6. She gets an angry phone call from the mother that night saying, "How dare you take my daughter's phone away?" So she says, "Do you realize what your daughter has on her phone?" And she said, "Yeah, I know what she has on her phone." She says, "That's, you know, don't be so uptight about it." She says, "I demand that you give the phone back." She said, "Absolutely not. I will not give the phone back till you decide to put some kind of filtering program or you have some kind of way of educating your child about it." I'm sure you could all guess the punchline of the story. What do you think the punchline of the story is? Next morning, girl comes back to school with a brand new iPhone 6, okay? So, now that's an extreme. That's an extreme, okay? Although very often what I hear happens in Manhattan comes to this part of the world not too long afterwards. But that's where we're heading. A lot of it is invisible. And a lot of it is subtle. A lot of it is subtle. So I want to talk about two or three subtle issues here. The first one has to do with the fascinating book that I just read this week. And I was kind of blown away by what was in this book. It was stuff I wasn't totally familiar with. My friend, Dr. Gil Ellenberg, told me about it. And I ran out and bought it when I heard what it was. I highly recommend this book. It's called A Deadly Wandering. A Deadly Wandering. It reads like a novel. It's by Matt Richtel, R-I-C-H-T-E-L. If you want just sort of some summer reading, it'll depress you quite a bit. But it's incredibly engaging and well-written. He won a Pulitzer Prize for his reporting on the subtle impact of technology. And it's a story about a wonderful young man who was 19 years old and was texting on a road in Utah and momentarily lost his focus and his car veered to the other side of the highway and killed two prominent rocket scientists who were fathers of young children, were very, very respected. Any kind of unintentional homicide of that kind is horrific. But here, these happen to be men who were unusually central to their community, to their families, and to society. They were literally rocket scientists, and very respected rocket scientists. So he very artfully reviews the recent literature in neuroscience research on what happens in the mind when we have these devices next to us. Frankly, it has me nervous, okay? I never text when I drive, but I often have a Bluetooth set up on my phone and I do hands-free talking. I don't know if I'm going to be doing it anymore after I saw that science, even though the law allows it, okay? And here's some of the interesting statistics that have come out just in the last couple of years that we didn't even know. Number one, texting, this isn't surprising at all, texting increases our chances of accidents sixfold, even more so than drunk driving. So like very few people would get into a car nowadays if they know that they had 3-4 drinks and that they're feeling impaired. The danger of texting is that very often there's no hakara sechet. We don't realize that literally it is impossible to truly multitask. There's something called the cocktail party test that these neuroscientists like to talk to each other. It's very easy to do. In the 10 minutes between my talk ending and the next talk starting, You could start talking to somebody next to you while you're waiting for the next speaker to start. And try to focus on one person near you who's talking to somebody else. And try to, while you're talking to the person you're talking to, try to also listen to what's going on in the other conversation. And what the new science of attention is showing us is most people think that you can do two things at once. Most people really believe that multitasking is possible, but they find it's virtually impossible. The most you'll be able to figure out is what's the gender of the person you're trying to overhear. Maybe if your name is spoken, you'll overhear it. But anything else, you won't be able to get. Multitasking is stressful, inefficient, and it makes us do both tasks that we're trying to do less well. Not so surprising, we're used to hearing that. But let me tell you a little bit more about some of the deeper understanding of what our eyes don't see. Because the purpose of this half hour is based on the idea that the eye sees one thing, but the mind, the eye only sees what the mind knows. Hopefully after this, you'll be maybe a little bit more aware of this. I certainly opened up to things I hadn't been seeing. There's a field called neuroeconomics. Some of you may know the work of Dr. Kahneman, the nephew of the Panovitcher Rebbe, and his best-selling book, Think Fast, Think Slow. He won the Nobel Prize together with the Dr. Tversky from another very famous rabbinic family. One of the things they talk about is, let's say I offer each of you $5 now, or the option to wait for $100 at some indeterminate time. They've done a lot of research on this, and on the whole, they find that people are willing to wait for the $100. It's a good deal. On average, about 50% of people are willing to wait 4 months for that $100. After that, they may go for the $5. It doesn't sound very wise to me, but I guess especially if you're younger, you're willing to do that. But then they do the same research with texting. And here's what they find. Remember, 4 months for where 50% of people are willing to pay out. They do the same thing with texting. They have you get a text from somebody who you know well. It might be a family member, it might be a close friend. And they ask, we'll give you $5 if you look at the text right away, but how much is it worth to you to wait? Do you know how long it takes to hit the 50% mark? 10 minutes. 4 months versus 10 minutes. Why? Because we're hardwired to be connected to others. What makes this so compelling isn't a bad part of us. It's a wonderful part of us. It's a part of us that's so connected to our family and to our friends. It's a part of us that is probably the best part of us. It's the part of us that's connected to the Kamayim HaPanim El Panim of having our hearts bounce off each other as we speak to one another. But it's set up in a very strange way. Because of the way it's set up so that you get it in little bite pieces. It's set up with something called an intermittent variable reinforcement ratio. It means that every time you look at your phone, if you have it set up so that you hear when new things come in, most of the time it's going to be nonsense, unimportant stuff, but every once in a while it'll be an important message. It's exactly the way psychologists program the slot machines in casinos. How do they get people standing all night hitting on those slot machines? It's a payoff called intermittent variable reinforcement schedule. Every once in a while, unpredictably. It's why sometimes people stay in abusive relationships more than they should, because the abuser is sometimes nice, sometimes not nice. These things are set up just like slot machines. You get a payoff every once in a while, unpredictably, and it keeps you constantly looking, often unconsciously. What the new research is showing, it's dealing with both parts of our nervous system. The men here who put on their Shel Rosh this morning, that's the frontal, prefrontal cortex where planning and goal setting goes. It very much plays into that. How do I know whether to show up to that barbecue tonight or at what time? How do I know how my kid did on that test? How do I know if my friend's inviting me over for later today? I have to plan. That's, our brains are wired to be connected that way. But now what the new research is showing, it's also bottom up. The primitive part of our brains that are hardwired to look for danger, so that if the door opens here and a mad dog comes rushing into here and we all go to protect ourselves, that's fight or flight. It happens automatically. It's primitive and it's automatic. Do you know that every time our phone pings, okay, with the message of a new email coming in, a new text coming in, every time it pings, you know what happens right away? You sort of go on a rush. They're now finding there's a little squirt of dopamine that comes into your brain, okay? Very similar to what happens to drug people who are into drugs. Doesn't mean that it's necessarily addictive in the same way for most people, but it's a little addictive-like. And that ping is automatic. So when you're on a car and you have this thing next to you and a ping comes in, you're going to unthinkingly, with that hakara sachet, pick up and look at it. And it's just in that split second that you could lose it all. So that's just a few thoughts that I wanted to share with you on that component, on some of this new research. Next point I shared with some of you at a YU Connects event here just about a month and a half ago. And it's about another subtle impact of what digital technology does for us. It has to do with being versus doing. I love Shabbos. I love Shabbos because Shabbos, we're away from this thing. On top of everything else, we're just sort of shut off. It's a different level of menucha. And the second Shabbos is over, I've disciplined myself not to necessarily run for my phone, but many people run for their phone. But here's the study. Shabbos is about being. The week is about doing. We have to become more comfortable with stillness in our life. Stillness is where creativity comes from. Stillness is where spirituality and connection comes from. So here's the study I shared with the people of the YU Connects thing. Great study. Science Magazine, last July 4th. Just came out exactly a year ago almost. 11 studies. Very simple study. They have people go into a very boring room, four walls and a chair. You're all alone in the room. And they say, spend the next 15 minutes being alone with your thoughts. People hate it. They don't like it. They're not used to it, especially people who aren't Shomer Shabbos must really hate it. We at least get, you know, de-inoculated, I guess, a little bit one day out of seven. But here's where the experiment becomes really interesting. You know where it becomes interesting? Is they take the phone away, they put you in a room alone for 15 minutes, just like all the other studies, but here they have a wrinkle. They get a subgroup of people who say, look, they tell you as part of this experiment, you might get a mildly painful electric shock. But if you pay us a little bit of money, we'd be happy to put you into a group that doesn't get shocked. And they only get people who are willing to pay a little bit of money not to be shocked. Sounds like a wise decision. I don't know why anybody would want to be part of a study where they're shocked, but this is what they do. Psychologists are very strange, okay? So they get this subset of people. They put them alone in a room. And as they're going into the room, these people who already paid not to be given a shock, they say, oh, by the way, we want you to be alone with your thoughts for 15 minutes. By the way, there's an electric shock machine in the corner of the room. Little shock machine. You don't feel any pressure to use it. But if you get really bored, feel free to give yourself a little shock. Strange, right? Do you know that 67% of the men and 25% of the women gave themselves the shock? They preferred the activity of an even mildly painful shock to being alone with their thoughts. Now that is scary stuff. That's scary stuff, okay? You know, it's the way the world has changed, how uncomfortable we've been, with, in a way, is the essence of being a Jew. You know, many times in recent years, I've thought about the four-word tefillah of Rabbeinu Bachya, about 1,000 years old. Hashem yatzileni mipi zor hanefesh. God, save me from fragmentation of my soul. Or similar to this, a beautiful thought I heard from Moshe Tzvi Weinberg quoting the Baal Shem Tov, that when we say a couple of times every day in Shema, V'yavadetem mehera, one of the ways of thinking about those two words is get rid of the rush in your life. Think about it a little bit differently. V'yavadetem mehera. It's not what it really means, but it's a great way of thinking about it in 2015. V'avadetem mehera. Get rid of the rush in your life. It's okay to be alone just with your thoughts. It's okay to have a little bit of self-reflection. Not only is it okay, it's essential to being a full human being. Spirituality is about connection. And connection is about being able to put this away. Okay? I bet everybody here is dying to check their emails and their texts, right? No? You're all okay. I don't see anybody checking. Okay. I have a great story, but I'll control myself. Okay. By the way, empathy requires being. Empathy requires being. If I showed you a video, let's say I had set up here with audio visual, which I didn't think to do, but it's okay not to. I'd show you a little video of a car trunk slamming on somebody's door. Very painful. Immediately, everybody in this room would wince. But if then I showed you an equally brief video of two people interacting and one person really hurting another person's feelings, you're not going to have an immediate empathy for the person whose feelings are being hurt. You know why? Empathy of that kind, of cruelty, bein adam l'chaveiro, requires focus and attention. And when people are looking down at their devices, they're not likely to have that empathy and attention. So parents who are mainly interacting with their children by being pulled away to text or answer phone calls. Children whose main mode of interaction, as it has been lately, is to interact with their families, okay, or interact with their friends via text, have a much cheaper form of interaction. Deeper interaction has to be with the visual cues of looking people face to face, eye to eye, with our hearts bouncing off each other, as Mishle says. It's an extremely important point. Doesn't mean that you don't use this in your daily life. It's become part of our lives. It's a tool, and it's a very valuable tool. But it's a tool that we have to have a very clear understanding of its promises and of its perils. Two more points before I move on to a concluding story. One is what this thing does to us cognitively. The recent research is showing that if I did show you my slideshow and I showed you a picture of a brain that's unitasking, only doing one thing at once, you would see only a small part of the brain is lit up, but it's very deep. When we only do one thing at once, our attention is focused, we think in a deeper way, and we accomplish much more. If I showed you the brain of a multitasker who's reading the same article or learning the same Sefer while also checking emails and texting, even though everybody will tell you I could do that fine, it doesn't impact on me at all, you'll see a brain that's buzzing, a brain that's lit up all over the place, but it's a brain on peace or hanefesh. It's a brain that literally is on peace or hanefesh. It's a brain that's not functioning in a deep and effective kind of way. And we just aren't aware of that. You know that if you watch the crawl on the bottom of CNN or Fox News, your comprehension of the news story goes down by about 40%. But the key is there's almost no hakara sechet and no recognition of that. And the final point before I get to my concluding story is the online disinhibition effect. Just to remember that it's very, very easy to be cruel to somebody else when you're online and you don't see them. Okay, we may be better at it than our children, but children who are normally very nice and kind and have terrific midos in face-to-face interaction are much less likely to do that when it's a texting interaction. Sometimes not on purpose, but when you don't see the hurt look in the person you're talking to, we tend to, in a room alone with no social cues telling us and showing us the pain we might be talking, we tend to have a much harder time censoring ourselves. What do parents do about this? Very simple recommendations. Here's what the research shows. Children want limits. In a study done with yeshiva kids in Los Angeles a few years back, more than half of teenage kids said, going to yeshivas in California, in the LA area, said, you know something? I one day will have children of my own. I one day will have adolescents of my own. I'm going to be much stricter about the internet and about digital technology with my kids. If only my parents had been stricter with me, but I could only get the images out of my head I never should have seen on the internet. If I could only get the time I lost and threw down the drain. If I could only get that back, I'm going to be tougher. And that's what the research shows. The balance between love and limits. Having a good relationship with your kid where they come to you with whatever they're worried about that might come to them online. Monitoring what they're doing in the context of a good relationship makes all of the difference in the world. The general new recommendations are, especially with preschoolers, it may be hard to do this with your older kids. Right now, since 2007, there's a whole new world in terms of preschoolers and technology. What happened in 2007, everybody? iPhone. It was a game changer. Before 2007, little toddlers and preschoolers couldn't use anything because you had to sit on a parent's lap and know how to use a mouse. Not so simple. Since 2007, little toddlers, even infants, know how to fool around with this stuff. And that could be a good thing because it's been shown to increase things cognitively for kids if you have the right kind of apps. But it means the kids are being pulled into this at a younger and younger age. But that's an opportunity. If the Chinese word characters for crisis is the word character for danger and for opportunity, it's an amazing opportunity. Because it's an opportunity that when your kids are still young, you set up for them even then. The technology is a privilege. You can't take a device to bed with you because the light of a device will interfere with your sleep. To understand that there are times of the day that have to be technology-free. To understand that kids have to ask permission to use technology. You have to limit weekday technology. They can't download apps on their own without parents knowing about it. And you could set that up and go to Common Sense Media to see what good apps are that are educationally and religiously appropriate and which ones aren't. All those things make a big difference. It may be hard to do this with your adolescent, but it's not so hard to do with the kid under 10. Now's the time to start to do that. It's never going to be easier. So, I know I threw out a lot of stuff. I didn't talk about the positives nearly enough because the positives are unbelievable in terms of connection and saying Tehillim for people who we wouldn't know otherwise need our Tehillim. In terms of learning and the unbelievable dissemination of Chesed and Torah that could happen with this unbelievable medium. But let me end with a story. Talked about one of the things behind our semi-addiction to these devices that are unconscious, both from the ping and from the planning, is that we're hardwired to want to connect. And connection is a wonderful thing. But we know that the kind of connection we're talking about on this is often superficial. It has its place, but it's often superficial and deceptive, as opposed to the deeper connection that are at the heart of spirituality and what has kids internalize our midos, which can only come, I think, from eye to eye and face to face. So I'll end with this story. I think I shared this with some people here, but what are you going to do? Okay? It's a story about Churchill and Dizengoff. In the early 1920s, Churchill was already a foreign minister and a very well-known public international figure. And he visited Tel Aviv. Tel Aviv was just in its infancy. And the mayor was Mayor Dizengoff. We all recognize that name. And Dizengoff was extremely excited and nervous about having this great man come. So he decided to have a parade for Churchill. But he wanted it to be proper. Tel Aviv was very undeveloped. So he sends the municipal workers to different parts of Israel, and they uproot palm trees from all over Israel, and they stick them in the ground. lining the parade route. Palm tree after palm tree after palm tree. So now the parade route is these beautiful palm trees, as far as the eye could see, welcoming the great man. And they have a wonderful parade for Churchill. Dizengoff is incredibly proud, and he goes up to the dais to introduce Churchill. But remember, this is Israel. So what do you do in Israel if you want to see Churchill? All of the kids and a lot of the adults climb up to the top of the palm trees to get a better look at Churchill. And one by one, like dominoes, Dizengoff watches in horror as one palm tree after another falls down. Children screaming, people screaming. The newspaper reports at the time don't say that anybody was hurt, thank God. But you could imagine the shame of Dizengoff, and he's nearly dying up there. And Churchill's trying very hard not to laugh. And he goes over to Mayor Dizengoff. He says, "Mayor, short word of advice. If you want to build a country and you want to build a city, you have to pay attention to the roots. You have to pay attention to the roots. That's the message I want to leave you all with. Roots can be shallow and can fall down. Very often, the roots and the connection on this are deceptive, but they topple. They don't forge the connection that our value system is all about. In order for our roots to be deep, we need to really be there with the Kamayim Hapanim El Panim, with pure and real focus, and may we all be Zocha to be able to really, really connect to our children, to our parents, to our families. And thank you so much for giving me this opportunity. Thank you."
How are you? Nice to see you. Okay. Hi, no, do you know where Dobel went?
I don't know.
Okay, I have a phone. We still don't have a recorder for the main show.
Shalom aleichem.
Bill Simons. How are you?
Are you Duba?
I'm not Duba. No,
Bill, I don't know who you are.
I'm Joel Simons.
Nice to meet you.
I'm Shmuel.
How
are you? Nice to meet you, Shmuel.
Well, I told you what is here, but right now I don't know where to
go.
What?
You don't know what to do or where to go yet.
Yes, and I don't know where the forwarders are.
We got a bit discussed.
No problem. Duba, she will be here. I need her too.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure which rooms we need you in right now.
Fine.
I don't think we need you here in the main show, but let me just find you. Stay here.
I'm here and I wait until I get instructions.
Thank you very much.
One question. Where's the bathroom? What time is recess? Is it really?
Because I want to commend you.
I wasn't able to make
you
it last
I have your phone. You're beginning phone calls.
I know. I would cut you because you didn't shut it off. I said, no, I didn't.
Okay. This
what
gentleman
happened?
Is from Moshavah.
Okay.
He's one of the volunteers.
Thank
just
God.
Where to go.
Okay, well.
There are a few others coming. Second, who's yeah. The boy that's in here was asking about the outlet.
That's my son, Yehuda.
Oh. Thank you. Where is it?
He's moving Panuski left or Panuski right. He's setting it up for Rabbi Gorman right before.
Okay, so
he's using the second intermission.
Okay,
to
third.
Do that.
Can someone introduce Rabbi Gorman for me? Because I have to take my daughter to a bus stop to go to camp.
Okay, that's what comment. Don't ask.
Okay.
I understand that totally. Yes. Yes.
Okay, so I'm going to introduce Rabbi Feiner, then I'm not going to be able to introduce Rabbi
Feiner, okay.
I'll come back for Shana.
No problem.
Okay? So
yes.
Just that one, someone can
join. No problem. Very good.
Okay?
Yes.
All right. I'm going to go.
Hi.
I'm walking in with you. How's that?
Craziest week. Craziest.
Oh, yeah.
It's crazy. Whatever. Anyway. I don't really know today, but, and then, whatever. And then my brother, typical, I said, you have to be there, whatever. He did make it out of there to be there at 11, but he didn't let us know. So I'm like sitting here. Coleman went to take Amy and Kevin to the airport, then to take Yehuda, Eliza to the bus. I have Eliza leaving today at 11:30. I have, this is the craziest day, craziest
next
time.
Year, you
my
have to give this over to someone else.
No, well, I accepted it last year because the truth is it shouldn't be this week. He doesn't get it. It could be during the first Sunday in the 3 weeks. The people who are up in the country from the camp will come down. They came down from a Shabbat today.
Right.
They'll come down. Rabbi Goldsmith said to me, it's the worst time. Okay, let me just get whatever. All right.
Hopefully my IT guy from school is coming and he's going to set me up.
What do you mean? I have the screen and the projector. What do you need? Just to hear
sound system, audio? Well, the screen and projector he set up Rabbi Open in the library. I'm right next door. So he said, I'm
in the library.
No,
I said,
Rabbi Open was in the library. I'm in Panuski.
You have your own. You have your own screen. Yehuda's setting you up with the screen and the projector.
Okay, so I'll tell him he doesn't have to so much because Rabbi opens room in the library. The IT guy from Hafter set it up. You can just
really?
Move it from one place to the next.
All right, so
that will be easy.
Okay, they're up there. Yehuda.
Yeah,
he is an elevator.
No, you can't do it.
Yeah, we're going.
What's her name?
That she's speaking, Ruski, right. Okay. But not now, she's speaking next. But he can't be in charge of it because he's setting up Rabbi Farman at the same time. So that's why I'm asking, will you be here to do it? Or?
He's going to help me.
Yeah. Okay.
Just get this to the room?
Yes. Put it in the back of the room.
Put it in the back of the room.
Right. Yeah. If he can stay here because he's setting up someone else exactly right at the same time she's speaking.
Hi, how do you do? Good? I know, he's our man. Do you have a man?
You did a great job.
He already knew some things. Yes. But he didn't set it up.
Okay, great.
Great.
All right.
Okay. I'm going to get the
computer. Pack up his overall stuff.
I just parked to the executive director's box and carried things in a
jar. Don't worry about it.
Benny, thank you very much again.
Okay. Thank you, Rabbi. Okay. Thank you. Okay, go ahead. What's his name?
I told him about the record.
Okay. No one's taping in there. My phone keeps going off.
Say, yeah, he's going. He's going to be
there. Go in there. Joel. All right. Okay, give Joel and you tape it. Okay? Thank you very much, Rabbi Rockhold.
Hi, show the letter. Yes.
Oh, you want a notebook?
I have to go. Very good.